This is where Rebecca stepped in. His revised Plan Orange, appropriately completed in 1984, was the ultimate survival strategy for the Afrikaner people. No variable was ignored. Population figures, terrain, resources, logistics. Rebecca not only updated the plan to include both Cuba's chemical weapons and his own country's nuclear option, but also, and this is what made Orange 84 so historic, the determination of which Afrikaners would be saved and which had to be sacrificed.
Sacrificed?
Rebecca believed that to try and protect everyone would stretch the government's resources to the breaking point, thus dooming the entire population. He compared it to survivors from a sinking ship capsizing a lifeboat that simply did not have room for them all. Rebecca had even gone so far as to calculate who should be brought aboard. He included income, IQ, fertility, an entire checklist of desirable qualities, including the subject's location to a potential crisis zone. The first casualty of the conflict must be our own sentimentality, was the closing statement for his proposal. For its survival will mean our destruction. Orange 84 was a brilliant plan. It was clear, logical, efficient, and it made Paul Rebecca one of the most hated men in South Africa. His first enemies were some of the more radical fundamentalist Afrikaners, the racial ideologues, and the ultra-religious. Later, after the fall of apartheid, his name began circulating among the general population. Of course, he was invited to appear before the Truth and Reconciliation hearings, and of course, he refused. "I won't pretend to have a heart simply to save my skin," he stated publicly, adding, "No matter what I do, I am sure they will come for me anyway." And they did, although it probably was not in the manner Rebecca could have expected. It was during our great panic, which began several weeks before yours. Rebecca was holed up in the Drakensberg cabin he had bought with the accumulated profits of a business consultant. He liked business, you know, one goal, no soul, he used to say. He wasn't surprised when the door blew off its hinges and agents of the National Intelligence Agency rushed in. They confirmed his name, his identity, his past actions. They asked him point blank if he had been the author of Orange 84. He answered, without emotion, naturally. He suspected and accepted this intrusion as a last-minute revenge killing. The world was going to hell anyway. Why not take a few apartheid devils down first? What he could never have predicted was the sudden lowering of their firearms and the removal of the gas masks of the NIA agents. They were of all colors, black, Asian, colored, and even a white man, a tall Afrikaner who stepped forward and without identifying his name or rank, asked abruptly, "You've got a plan for this, man, don't you?" Rebecca had indeed been working on his own solution to the undead epidemic. What else could he do in this isolated hideaway? It had been an intellectual exercise. He never believed anyone would be left to read it. It had no name, as explained later, because names only exist to distinguish one from others. And until that moment, there had been no other plan like his. Once again, Rebecca had taken everything into account. Not only the strategic situation of the country, but also the physiology, behavior, and combat doctrine of the living dead. While you can research the details of the Rebecca plan in any public library around the world, here are some of the fundamental keys.